Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the 28 punishments from the Scripture right after this. You know, a marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about all of that is that you don't have any input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or the restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of it. And if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it's more costly than your military enlistment, or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about it than either your military obligation or your house payments. Now, about two-thirds of all marriages here in the United States end in divorce. But whether you are a husband or wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of let the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for our free general law CD set? That's the place to start. And let me share some of the vital information that you need to know about the law and that marriage contract. To get that free general law CD package, just call us direct. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org. A lot of times I get asked questions about the penalties that are imposed in the Scripture. There are 29 separate penalties that are imposed. 24 of the crimes in the Scripture are punishable by death. But not all of the punishments in the Scripture carry the death penalty. Here's a short list of the death penalty crimes. Murder, of course, pretty much tops the list. When you're in a civil society, whether it's France or Germany or China or Russia or the United States, almost all the countries in the world require the death penalty for murder. Many of those countries will have death penalties for various other crimes. Here in the United States, we got a new one now. It's called terrorism. If you get caught performing one of these acts of terrorism, you could be executed for that. Treason oftentimes is a cause for the death penalty. But here in the Bible, we see a number of crimes that are just looked upon as being boys will be boys kinds of activities. You know, like adultery, Sabbath breaking, cursing your parents, abortion. I mean, abortion in this country is a multi-billion dollar a year industry. We don't have any qualms about abortion. But in the scripture, there's a penalty for that. It's a capital felony. Death penalty is the result of it. So, if you've got a pen and paper out there, why don't you take some of these down? Sometimes people are interested, sometimes they're not. But, you know, if you could jot down a few of these, and it'll give you something to talk about over the dinner table, and you can discuss how stupid God is for having created a death penalty for something as innocuous as Sabbath breaking, or maybe even just false prophecy. You know, if you were running a newspaper, a scandal sheet like the National Enquirer, under the Mosaic Law, those editors of that magazine would end up dead. I didn't write this. Don't get mad at me. I just wanted to report it to you. Fortunately for all of those boys, that these laws aren't being enforced today, at least by anybody that they know. Otherwise, you know, I could get hot and heavy pretty darn fast. All right. Top of the list here is murder. You'll see that in Exodus 21, verse 12. There's a number of places in Scripture, like Exodus 21:14, Leviticus 24:17 through 21, that also label that as a capital felony. I'm not going to give you the multiple scriptures. I'll just give you one. One's good enough. If you want to look it up, you can look up some more. But murder, top of the list over here, Exodus 21:12, is a capital felony. Smiting your parents in Exodus 21, verse 15. That's a pimply-faced punk kid. Could be a female. Slaps her mother. The penalty for that is death. D-E-D. Dead on arrival. Number three, kidnapping. Now, we can remember, can't we, some very famous kidnapping cases. It occurs even today, occasionally, not nearly as much as it does in a lot of other countries like Somalia and so on around the world. But kidnapping here in the United States once in a while, like the Lindbergh kidnapping case back in, I think it was about 1930, 31, 32, 33, something like that. And the guy that did the kidnapping, he was executed. They caught him and they executed him. But that's tit for tat. That's just. God himself recommends that. Number four, cursing of parents, of course, is punishable by death. See, you don't have to actually reach out and then slap them. You could just curse them. You could just cuss your daddy out and say, you know, I've had enough of this crap with you, and I'm leaving. And that would be grounds in Exodus 21:17 to take you out and stone you to death. Number five, abortion. In the Bible, it's called passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. You'll see that in Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. Today, we have another name for it, abortion. Birth control, that's another term that's used. That's punishable by death. Number six, negligent property liability resulting in death. Well, negligence, we have a law similar to that here, but we typically don't kill people. We require that they pay a penalty. For instance, you're driving your car down the road and you have an accident and you kill somebody in the process and it's determined that you were the cause of it. That's a negligent property loss resulting in death. Number seven, the daylight shooting of a thief, which results in death. There was a story one time years ago. It was in Berkeley, California. And this guy was going on vacation, so he asked his neighbor to watch his house. And so the neighbor is watching this guy's house, and he sees two kids coming out of the house, and they're robbing it. So he grabs a gun, he runs out into the driveway, and he says, hold her right there. And these two kids run. He shoots one of them, kills them. That's called the daylight shooting of a thief. Now, that's prohibited in the scripture. Now, if it was dark and he shot this guy and killed him, that's legal. You can shoot him in the dark, but you can't shoot him in the daylight. And that's because the penalty for theft is not death. The penalty for theft is restitution. But if in the middle of the night and you can't see and somebody's breaking up your house and in the process you kill this guy, well then we don't find fault with you for that. But in the daylight you need to be careful that you don't kill people who are guilty of theft. Better to let the thief get away than to kill the thief in the daylight and then end up having killed him and then you got to pay the piper for it. So the daylight shooting of a thief is prohibited. You'll see that in Exodus 22, verses 2 and 3. That negligent property liability resulting in death comes from Exodus 21, verses 28 and 29. So we've got murder, smiting of parents, kidnapping, cursing of parents, abortion, negligent property liability, and the daylight shooting of a thief resulting in death. Verse 7. Number 8, witchcraft. Exodus 22:18 prohibits that. Now, there's 17 ways that you can practice witchcraft. Well, 17 that I've identified. There could be 25, I guess. Doesn't say that I've got them all, but I've got a list here of about 17. Practicing on a Ouija board, for instance. Practicing Halloween. Trick-or-treating. You know, those are acts of witchcraft. And those are prohibited and punishable by death. So today, here in America, Halloween is the second biggest holiday of the year. Christmas is number one. Halloween now surpasses Easter in the total amount of money spent on the occasion. Halloween now is punishable by death because it's a practice of witchcraft. All right. That's Exodus 22:18. Bestiality, that sexual relations with animals, that's a violation of Exodus 22:19, carries the death penalty. I'm watching TV and I see people make reference to it from time to time. It's pretty funny. Everybody's having a good belly laugh, but it's really not a laughing matter. It's pretty serious. Death penalty is involved there. Number 10, idolatry. Exodus 22:10. That's the worship of a foreign and alien god. So it's kind of important that we know what the word worship means. Worship is obedience to the laws of a foreign god. A god is a sovereign. Texas is a sovereign. That's why we call it the sovereign state of Texas. A sovereign, when you look it up in the law dictionary, is a lawmaker. God is a lawmaker. And he says, you shall have no other gods before me. Texas is a lawmaker, and they're out making laws, and people obey those laws. The obedience to those laws doesn't constitute a crime until it violates one of the laws of God. Then you've got another god before the Creator. So an example of that, in case you were wondering about driving the speed limit or getting a driver's license, the state requires that you drive 65 miles an hour with a driver's license and so on. Well, God doesn't tell you how fast to drive, so if you were to drive 55, 65, or 75, or 95, or 150, you would not be violating the Mosaic law because there's no specificity as to how fast or how slow to drive. Now, the states come in and they say, well, we don't want you driving 150 or even 100 or 85. We want you to drive somewhere around, you know, they've got speed limits as low as 15 miles an hour. I've seen school zones with 15 in them, or 35 or 50 or 60 or 70. And I don't think there's much over 75. And then they want to prescribe penalties. Now, here's the problem that you have, though, with a driver's license and various and sundry other laws that you might follow. It's against the law to make a contract with a foreign and alien god. Violates the contract statute in Exodus 20, about Exodus 23, 32, and 33, I believe. So the driver's license is a crime. That's an act of idolatry against God. Same thing with making business licenses and marriage licenses and some other things. You know, the average guy today goes down and gets a marriage license. He doesn't see that as a capital felony, but, you know, that's his viewpoint in life. And most people practice the law of Florida well ahead of the law of God, and they're more concerned about California and Germany and France than they are about Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. But as a reporter, I'm just here to report facts, not to sit here and pontificate about what you ought to or ought not to do. So just tuck that one away in your heart over here. Idolatry. Idolatry, again, that is worship or obeying the laws of other gods in place of the Creator. And that's called idolatry. Capital felony. Number 11 is another one kind of similar to it. Profaning the holy Sabbath. It violates Exodus 35, verse 2. That idolatry is a violation of Exodus 22, verse 20. Bestiality, a violation of Exodus 22, 19. And witchcraft is a violation of Exodus 22, verse 18. So the Sabbath day over here, Exodus 35, 2, is on Saturday. And so every Saturday that comes up, most people go to the mall. It's the biggest buying, selling, and trading day of the week. It makes all the sense in the world that we do that on Saturday. Jesus made an observation one time in Luke 6:46. He says, "Why do you people call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say?" Well, that's a rhetorical question, and of course today, people go to church on Sunday and they practice the Sabbath on Sunday, Muslims on Friday. Some people go to church on Wednesday and not on Sunday because it's more convenient for them. And they figure, well, one day is as good as another. But that's not what the Creator had to say about it. And He had a particular day of the week in mind. And then He said, this is the way I want this done. And then attached a penalty for it. And the funny part is, it's not just a $50 fine, it's the death penalty. Now, number 12 is adultery. That one, too, that's kind of fun and games. Boys will be boys. That's in Leviticus 20, verse 10. Capital felony. And we're prohibited from practicing adultery here. Incest, there's a whole chapter that deals with incest. It's in Leviticus chapter 18. But the penalty for incest is in Leviticus 20, verses 11 and 12. Incest, Leviticus 20, verses 11 and 12. You know, that's where you're having sexual relations with brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. And I was watching Saturday Night Live the other night, and Betty White was on. And she's an old-timey TV and movie actress. She's getting up in years now. I think she's, you know, pushing 80, 90 years old. And she was on putting on a little skit over there in which the skit was aimed at incest between a grandson and a grandmother. And it's great fun, and it's great sport, and people laugh, and they have a good time. But such activities are punishable by death. It would seem like to me that that's really not a laughing matter, but, you know, whatever turned John. Number 14 talks about sodomy. That's in Exodus 20, verse 13. That's a pretty popular pastime here in America. And they tell us that we've got about 10% of our population that are now sodomites. I find it hard to believe that it's that high, but you know, I don't write these numbers. That's a number I saw the other day. Exodus 20, verse 13, that's a capital felony. Now, number 15, this is pretty odd. It doesn't occur very often, but there was a famous movie personality here. I'll think of his name in a minute. Marriage of a man to both a mother and her daughter. That's a violation of Leviticus 20, verse 14. I forget this guy. He was married to this woman, Woody Allen, I think his name was. Woody Allen, he's married to this girl's mother. Then he's having sexual relations with this woman's daughter. So this mother-daughter combination, that's a death penalty combination. Blasphemy now is treason against God. That's a violation of Leviticus 24, verse 16. Blasphemy, treason against God. Blasphemy is the refusal or failure to obey God and keep His commandments. So when you know that there's a law and then you refuse or fail to do that, that's called blasphemy. So then we take you out and we stone you to death. All right, number 17, false prophecy. Deuteronomy 13, verses 1 through 5, false prophecy. That's punishable by death. There's a lady, let's see if I can remember her name now, Jean Dixon. Jean Dixon. She's written about quite often. Many times people who are witches or warlocks, they like to prophesy that California is going to fall into the ocean. These prophets are demon-inspired or demon-possessed. And then they make prophecies, and God said, you know, people get confused about that. I tell them one thing, and then somebody else comes along and then says that I'm telling them something different. And he said, now to make sure that that doesn't happen, whenever somebody comes up and they make a prophecy, like California is going to fall into the ocean on June 10th, you make sure you write that down. Then on June 10th, if it doesn't fall into the ocean, you will know that that person is a false prophet. Yeah, the false prophet is one who makes a prophecy and it doesn't happen. Then you take that false prophet out and you stone him to death. And I try to be real careful about that, and I make mention once in a while, maybe you've heard me say, I'm not a prophet, and I don't know when that's going to happen. Can't tell you. Now, there are some things that are going to happen, and I can tell you, here's what God says is going to happen, but if I were to tell you that California was going to fall into the ocean on, oh, let's say, June 10th, and it actually happened, it wouldn't be because I'm a prophet, it would be because I made a good guess. And that's because I don't have any capacity to make that happen or to stop it from happening. So prophecy then requires the active ingredient of somebody who actually has that kind of power. So in the scripture, when you see God says, and the earth wobbled around through the universe like a drunken man, then there's going to have to be somebody that can make the earth in its orbit around the sun wobble. I think he uses the word stagger, but, you know, wobble. There's another prophecy that says the sun and the moon will not give their light. Well, I can tell you right now, little Georgie Gordon can't turn the lights out on the sun or the moon. But there is a guy here, a God, a creator. This is the guy that wrote the scripture. He says he can do that. And I got to thinking about that one day, and I said, well, it looks like to me that a guy that can light up the sun could probably put it out. A guy that can light a match can probably blow it out. Now, that doesn't mean that I can do it or that I know anybody else that can, but he says that he not only can, but he's going to do that. So I can be pretty cocky and confident and say, well, that's coming one of these days, but if you were to ask me, well, what day is that coming? I haven't got a clue. I don't know. All right, so we've got sodomy, marriage, blasphemy, and false prophecy here. Now, number 18 deals with judges and priests, and it says you're not to revile the priests and the judges, Deuteronomy 17, verses 12 and 13. We call that contempt of court. Now, last time I heard, contempt of court's, you know, fairly tame. You know, you can give the judge the finger and tell him, you know, kiss off, and about the most he can do is throw you in jail for a week or you know, maybe fine you or something like that. But under the Mosaic law, you need to be real careful about how you talk to judges and priests. Because if you give them any lip, then the punishment then is death. Number 19, perjury. False witness regarding capital crime. So perjury isn't always a capital crime, just like shooting a thief isn't always a capital crime, or negligent property liability isn't always a capital crime, but it can be. So this is one of the three that can be a capital crime. So you need to be careful here about lying about people, particularly when you're testifying against somebody. When you come in and you testify, now O.J. Simpson, remember he was on trial and a guy by the name of Mark Furman came in and lied about him. And Mark Furman was prosecuted for perjury and he was convicted and he had to pay a penalty. It wasn't death. And in Mark Furman's case, it should not have been death because O.J. Simpson was not facing the death penalty. But he was facing life in prison. Now, the law requires that whatever it was that you were trying to do to that guy is what will be done to you. So when Mark Furman lied about O.J. Simpson, he was trying to convict him and to put him in prison for life. So in a case like that, where you come in to testify against a defendant who's facing life in prison, everyone that comes in and lies and is prosecuted and convicted, the penalty then is that they get sentenced to life in prison. That's why I've said this God has a great sense of humor, a great sense of justice, and a great sense of humor. I mean, think about that for a minute. You're looking for a penalty that fits the crime. And so God comes along and says, I think that a good penalty, a good way to match up the penalty with the crime, is to do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. So if a guy wants to come in and lie about you, and his intention is to get you killed, well then, in the event that he lies, we'll take him out and we will kill him. Tit for tat. If, though, you're not facing the death penalty and it's just life in prison, well, then we'll just give him life in prison. If, on the other hand, let's say it was a traffic case, and the policeman comes in and he lies about you, and then we catch him lying about you, but the penalty was a $500 fine. Okay, so then we fine the policeman $500. No, just tit for tat. I call that poetic justice. I kind of like that. All right, so that's perjury, false witness. In a capital crime, it can get you killed. That's Deuteronomy 19, verses 15 through 21. Reviling priests and judges, remember, Deuteronomy 17, verses 12 and 13. False prophecy, that's Deuteronomy 13, verses 1 through 5. Blasphemy, that's treason against God, that's Leviticus 24, verse 16. And then marriage of a man to both a mother and her daughter, and that's Leviticus 20, verse 14. Now, in the King James, they use the word term marriage. You don't have to be married. You typically would not be married to a mother and her daughter. You'd be married to her mother, and then you'd be out here having sexual relations with the daughter, or you're married to the daughter and you're having sexual relations with your mother-in-law or your father-in-law or, you know, some combination thereof, in which case then we've got a death penalty case here. Now, here's a good one. Boy, this one is really off the wall. Number 20 is called incorrigible delinquency. What do you do with underage children? Children or young adults who are under the age of 21. 21 is the majority here in Scripture. Okay. And so you're 18, 17, 16, 15 years old, and you're out here committing crimes. How do you deal with juvenile delinquents? Here in the United States, we have a pretty good size juvenile delinquent problem. And the people of America have got a clue as to how to handle it, what to do about it, how to stop it. And listen to this. The death penalty comes into play. It's in Exodus 21, verses 18 through 21. It works very simply. Whatever your kid does, you're responsible for. Isn't that kind of wild? Remember, I mentioned to you a couple of times that strict liability is the rule of law under Anglo-Saxon administration. It's strict liability. So, in the event that I've got a bull out here, let's just apply it, and I'll show you how this works. I got a bull out here, and you're walking down my lane, and this bull comes up, and he raises hell with you, scares you half to death, and so you come in here, and you say to me, Mr. Gordon, your bull out there is wild and out of control, and I'm scared of him, and I think he's trying to kill me, and blah, blah, blah. Now, I've been warned, see? So, I don't take action, and sure enough, the next day you're out walking down the road, and the bull comes over, knocks you down, puts you in the hospital. What's the penalty for that? Well, I got to pay all your hospital bills. I'm liable for all of your expenses here. Time off work could get kind of pricey for me. You don't kill me yet, but pretty pricey. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion, though, that after having told me about this, and I didn't listen to you, and that bull killed you, and there you are, laying dead in the road. Now what's the penalty? After all, I've got homeowner's insurance. No, under the Mosaic law, the penalty's death. And that's because I knew or I should have known that bull was a danger. And the bull, it proved to be just exactly what you said it was. And the bull killed you. So we take the bull out and we stone the bull to death. And then we take little Georgie Gordon out and we stone him to death right alongside the bull. Now we got you're dead, I'm dead, and the bull's dead. And that's because I wouldn't listen. Okay? So that's called incorrigible. Well, that's the penalty. Now, getting back and applying that to incorrigible delinquency, when you have a child who goes out and causes damage, you, the parent, are responsible for the damage of your child in the same way that the owner of the bull is responsible for the damage that's caused by the bull. So, when you have a kid that goes out and kills people, then you take that kid out and you stone him to death. And if the parents were warned about that kid, I mean, if somebody came up and said, hey, look, your kid, he's out of control and he's over here hitting old ladies over the head and stealing their purses, you know, it's just a matter of time until he hits some old lady over the head and kills her. And then when that happens, then we're going to take you out and stone you right along with your kid. So to prevent that, you've got this kid and he won't mind you. Then you tell him, now listen, kid, if you don't mind me now, we're going to have to take you out and stone you to death. Now, if this kid won't mind you, then you're liable for all of his deprivations. So you bring him over to the city council, be the elders of the city. And then you report to them, hey, this kid over here, he's out of control. He doesn't mind his mother and father. He curses his mother and father, or. And so then we come to a conclusion. You've warned everybody in the community, this kid's a threat to everybody. Out of control. Wild. Wild as a March hare. And so we all together, we take him out, and the daddy here, father, casts the first stone. I had a daughter like that. And she came in one day and she said to me, she was out practicing a capital crime, and she says, now I suppose that you would that you would recommend that I be stoned to death. And I said, sweetheart, I would cast the first stone. Now, here in the United States, we have an oddity. We got a lot of Muslim people come over here. And they actually practice this, you know, back in their country, you know, where they come from. Of course, they can't do that here. But, you know, where they come from in Syria or Jordan or someplace, they've got a kid that's out of control. They take him out and kill him, which is exactly what God recommends here. In fact, he doesn't just recommend it. He says, this is the way I want juvenile delinquency taken care of, and here's the consequences of it. We had a case here in Missouri. Some Muslim father killed his daughter because she wouldn't mind and she wouldn't pay attention. So anyway, they caught him and they locked him up in prison. But I just wanted to point out that the Muslim guy's right, the state of Missouri is wrong as usual. And God, one of these days, is going to come back and start straightening this out. And when he does, he'll reinstitute that incorrigible delinquency standard. And then you won't have juvenile delinquents. I can remember as a kid, there weren't any juvenile delinquents. Well, none that we could identify. Because parents, when I was a kid, didn't allow children to be juvenile delinquents. Hey, I'm at the halfway point here. I'm not quite done here with crimes requiring the death penalty, but I am at the halfway point, so I've got to remind you here, under penalty of law here, that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page and then download that free general law CD package for yourself. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about crimes that require the death penalty. There are 29 crimes in Scripture that require punishment. And we'll talk about those in a later program. In this program, there are 24 crimes that require the death penalty. So I thought we'd hit the heavy-duty ones first before we get on to parking tickets and seatbelt violations. Maybe we ought to talk about, you know, murder, treason, and terrorism. Now, whoredom is a crime. Now, here in the United States, we have a thing called sex education in our public schools, sex education class. And in our sex education classes, we teach our young people, boys and girls, to be sexually open. At age 14, we think they should be out practicing sexual experimentation. And as a result of that, we turn our girls into whores and our boys into pimps and sodomites. Now, those are capital crimes. Now, I want to point out that the people who facilitate these crimes are what we call accessories before and after the fact. Before and after the fact. So, they're just as guilty as the guy that's committing the crime. In fact, they're probably a little worse than that. It's almost like selling drugs it's almost like your kindergarten teacher selling drugs to her students, to her charges. You know, we wouldn't blame the children so much as we would blame a teacher for doing that. Now, that drug thing there now is a brand of witchcraft. So, you know, if you're out here smoking dope and taking cocaine and so on, that's a brand of witchcraft. Now, here in the United States, we have about 100% of the people who are 65 years old who are taking prescription drugs. That's another brand of witchcraft, capital felony. And then if you take a look at the number of people in the country that are Sabbath breakers, you have 300 million people in the country, and how many of them are in violation of the Sabbath, or how many people in America practice adultery? Witchcraft. Now, think about it. Now, most of us aren't murdering people, and most of us don't slap mom and dad around, and we don't curse our parents, and most of us don't kidnap anybody. Now, I haven't murdered anybody, I haven't slapped my mom and dad, I haven't kidnapped, I haven't cursed my parents, and I haven't practiced abortion. I haven't committed any negligent property liability that resulted in anybody's death. I never shot anybody in the daylight because he was a thief. And I never practiced bestiality. But I practiced a lot of witchcraft and I practiced a lot of idolatry. And so that would get little Georgie killed. That's number 8 and 10. And profaning the Sabbath, I did that a lot. Adultery, I did a lot of that. Incest, I never did do that one. Sodomy, I have never done that one. And having sexual relations with mother and daughter, I never did that one. Blasphemy, treason against God, oh yeah, I did that one. That was pretty good. False prophecy, I don't think I could claim that one. I haven't done that one. Reviling priests and judges, I did that a couple of times. Yep, I did that a couple of times. I had to straighten up from that one. Perjury, false witness. Yep, I've done that a time or two. Incorrigible delinquency. I don't think I was ever incorrigible. My daddy didn't allow that. Whoredom. Nope, I don't think I'm involved in that one. Rape, I never did that one. Number 23, usury. Boy, I was good at that usury crime. And then oppressing widows. I'll tell you a little story here about an old lady that I was oppressing. God, that lady could have had me killed if she'd have known what to do, but she didn't. So now, most of us, if you stop and think about it, looking at these 24 capital felonies, you know, we're probably practicing 16, 18, 20 of them. I mean, hell, we're only in violation of 4 or 5. But I want to point out that you only need to be killed once life is, you know, a one-time affair here, you know, your first physical life, one-time affair. Now, you're coming up in a resurrection one of these days. There's no two ways about that. But just to keep yourself from getting killed or to see if you can't extend your lifespan through this great tribulation that we're beginning to experience here, you might want to consider changing your ways. And so I'm in compliance now with all 24 of these capital crimes. But I wanted to start off the program here and show you that out of 300 million people here in the United States, all of us, all 315 million of us, are in violation of some of these capital felonies, and usually we do it on a regular or routine basis. And so, you know, when this thing comes down on us and you're sitting there saying, why would God do this to me? I'm just an innocent bystander. I thought I would point this out to you so that you don't say that, so that you'll know that you're guilty of sin and that what's happening to you is something that you deserve. So when this happens to me, I will be able to say, well, I deserved it, and I don't deny it. I was in hopes that by stopping my criminal behavior, I could have saved myself, but I guess I failed. All right, so now this rape, number 22. We have some rape that goes on in this country, and it's a good thing that we don't kill the prisoners for rape in this country. I'm not sure that we ever did. In which case, we might have in the past. In other words, black men raping white women, I'm pretty sure we killed all of you guys. But white men raping black women, I'm not sure that any of those guys got killed. So we have a two-tier justice system in America that we apply, just like we do today, you know, with white-collar crime. I mean, if you get caught doing something. Now, there's a lady here with the PTA, and she embezzled $25,000 from the PTA, and she got caught the other day. Now, God help her. We're going to lock her up in the penitentiary. Now, Goldman Sachs, or J.P. Morgan, or the public officials in the Congress, they can conspire together and steal billions of dollars from Greece and Portugal. And they can write up all kinds of fraudulent contracts and mortgages. We don't punish them the same way that we do common white-collar criminals down here that steal money from the PTA. By God, we catch you stealing money here at the PTA, and we're going to take a pound of flesh. But if you steal $1 billion from Greek, that's okay. And we call that boys will be boys. All right. Well, anyway, that's a little off point, but talking about rape over here, we have never applied rape standards in quite a uniform manner that we were told to, and 30% of all rape convictions are bogus. We're finding that out now that we've discovered a thing here called DNA, you know. So I wanted to point that out to you, 30%. Now, every rape conviction requires that some female point her finger at the defendant and say, that's the man that raped me. Then the jury, believing the woman, of course, and the rapist, that is, the man involved, he never takes the stand in his own defense and denies it. So you have the female comes in, points at you, and says, you raped me, and then you don't take the witness stand and testify, no, I didn't. And at least you should get on the witness stand and say, no, I didn't do that. Then there would at least be a contested issue of fact. But fortunately, we're not killing you men anyway, and so we just lock you up in prison for 20 years. But 30% of those guys are in fact innocent, so I just thought I'd point that out. Number 23 is usury. That's a violation of Ezekiel 18, verses 5 through 14. Rape is a violation of Deuteronomy 22, verses 25 through 27. Whoredom is a violation of Deuteronomy 22, verses 13 through 21. and this incorrigible delinquency is a violation of Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 through 21. Usury, that's a good one. Usury deals with interest. That's where you're out here buying, selling, and trading, and then you go down, sign a mortgage on your house. How many of you people out there have a mortgage on your house? You pay it every month, and you pay interest on that, don't you? You got a car, and you're making a car payment, and you're making an interest payment on there too, aren't you? Okay. All right. Now, that's usury and interest. That makes you an accessory before and after the fact. It's a capital felony, capital crime. And if you'll go to Ezekiel 18, verses 5 through 14, it'll talk to you, and it'll tell you about a guy that goes out and he does these things, and God asks the question in a rhetorical form. He says, shall this man live? He shall not live. He shall surely die because he has done all of these abominations. And God calls usury an abomination. So all of the bankers in the country should be stoned to death, right along with all the people that borrowed the money and agreed to pay the interest. And that's just real special. I mean, if we got down here on the bottom line, there wouldn't be any of us left alive, would there? Now, here's a good one on the last one, number 24, oppressing widows. It's Exodus 22, verses 22 through 24. This is a sleeper. We had an old lady. Her name was Lydia Augustine. God love her. Lydia Augustine, she lived in the Raymond Departments, and back about 1970 or 71 or 2, along in there, a consortium of us guys bought that building from old lady Dutton, Duddy, Mrs. Duddy. Anyway, this old lady owned this building. She and her husband built it back in 1912, built it brand new, owned it free and clear. And so by 1970, when this lady died, there was an inheritance tax to pay. And the heirs couldn't pay the inheritance tax, so that forced the sale of the building. And so then we swooped in, you know, like knights on white horses there, to save the day and to screw them out of their inheritance so that we could take the building away from them, and we did. And because this lady owned this building free and clear, she had artificially low rents. And if you'll remember, this is right about the time that Richard Nixon put in these price controls about, wasn't it 1971? He suspended gold payments, remember? August 15th of 71. And then put in these price controls. Well, anyway, Mrs. Augustine, she was an old, 85-year-old retired school teacher. And at that time, I was about 30, or thereabouts, you know. And young fella, and I was the manager of the building. And what we wanted to do was to renovate the apartments. And we were renovating the apartments. And this old lady, she didn't like me. And I could understand why. You know, if you had a horse's ass like me, managing your building, you probably wouldn't like me either. So, and I guess that was par for the course. But I didn't care too much for her either. And of course, being young and being dumb and not having been instructed about widows, and this was an old lady and she was a widow. And so I just decided what I'll do is just evict her. And so I gave her an eviction notice. I just said, hey, lady, you know, out you go. And right about that time, Nixon comes along with these price controls. Remember rent controls? And saved her bacon because you can't evict people under rent control. And she paid her rent every month, $65 a month rent. And her apartment, you know, if we moved her out and renovated her apartment, we'd probably rent her apartment for $130. So it would have been good if I could just get her the hell out of there. But anyway, as time went on, you know, I gave her eviction notices and then she wouldn't pay her rent. And then I'd give her a notice and one thing and another. And so I oppressed this old lady. And that's what the Bible calls oppressing a widow or an orphan, you know, oppressing this old lady. Let me flip over here to Exodus 22 and I'll show you what what I was bumping up against here. It's Exodus 22, verses 22 through 24. And here's God. He says, "You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any wise, and they cry out at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry. And my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless." Notice that the operational part of the statute is, "And they cry at all unto me." Oh, see, there wasn't any doubt but what I was afflicting this old lady. I was oppressing her. But she never cried out to God and asked for a remedy. That's what saved my bacon. And that's because she was probably an evolutionist, an old school teacher lady. I'll just bet you that this old lady was an evolutionist, and she was out here an anti-God type. And that's what she struck me as being, you know. And so as a result of that, she never could, or she didn't know how, to effect a remedy. Now, the one time I had a student here, pretty good student, pretty good guy. But we had a lady here whose husband died. And this lady whose husband died, she was not only now a widow, but she was also a handicapped widow. She'd had a stroke during childbirth, and she could barely talk, and she was incapacitated. And her husband had some money. And this student that I'm telling you about here, we'll call him Paul, he went over and robbed this widow. Went over and robbed him. This widow, knowing and understanding the law, cried out to God for a remedy. And this guy, Paul, within 18 months, developed a brain tumor and died from it, and which left his wife a widow, and his children fatherless. And I looked at that and I said, you know, that guy deserved that. And he got what he deserved. And I deserved it also. And the only thing that saved me was that old lady Augustine didn't know how to effect a remedy. I didn't know how close I'd come to getting killed. So that's why I say that one's a sleeper. So a widow is a widow indeed. The scripture calls it a widow indeed when she's 60 years old. Now, a widow who is widowed, who has children, is a widow who is under 60, like the lady I just told you about. She had a child, and she wasn't 60, and this guy Paul ended up getting killed. Now, old lady Augustine was over 60, and she was a widow indeed, as the scripture calls it. And so I deserved it and didn't get it because I lucked out, and Paul deserved it, and he got it because he was in violation of the law. So there you have it, boys and girls. 24 crimes requiring the death penalty. Next time we'll take a look at 29 crimes that don't necessarily require the death penalty, but boy, do they require justice. All right, I'm out of time. Let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal that our time is up. I have to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time. same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.